Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Here it is, the Wolverine here. Professor Gary Lee still recovering. We took 2 weeks off because Mr. Bowen had some things he had to do and was going to be out of town. But at this time, we'd like to bring Mr. Bowen on and maybe let him talk about his event that he just had and then maybe some of the things he has coming up here in the near future. Mr. Bowen, are you there, sir? Okay. It appears that there's no Mr. Bowen, so we will go right into talking about what Professor Gary Lee has going on, or the History Museum, rather, has going on. September 27th and 28th in Houston, Texas, at the Hilton Galleria, we will be roasting none other than my instructor, Professor Gary Lee. And yes, he is doing better. He is recovering, getting stronger every day. But we just want to ask you to continue to keep him in his prayers, because that's what works. And always send people to the GoFundMe page for his medications and things of that nature that he needs. Okay, now, this roast is going to be two roasts. They're going to be one in September, one in November. Both of these roasts are going to have a Hawaiian flavor, because this is a Hawaiian double whammy, because we're roasting Professor Gary Lee and the giant killer, John Natividad. Now, both these guys are Hawaiian. Both these guys love a Hawaiian luau and a good time. So, it's going to be Hawaiian shirts, you know, all the good Hawaiian amenities. Okay? And at Professor Gary Lee's roast, we're going to have Cotawars and the Bubble Kumite. Okay? Cotawars, you got to have win at least 100 first place to be asked to enter. And then they will compete. And then there will be the Kevin Funakoshi Traditional Challenge, where Shotokan Karate, Shotoru, Kyokushin, Wataru, Goju-ru, Shorin-ru, they'll all compete against each other. They'll get the first place people from all that. Then they'll compete for one overall winner from the collective styles. And then they'll go to compete against the number one and number two seed from last year's Cotawars. Okay, also at that time, there will be the Ohana Open, and there will be sparring going on. There will be a lot of different competitions and weapons and all kinds of stuff going on there. There will also be several seminars going on at that time during the roast of Professor Gary Lee through the Legends Weekend. Also, we will be having the Legends Wall, where it would be the Memorial Wall, and it will have a lot of the legends that have passed on there on that wall. Also, John Natividad's roast, like I say, will be November 1st and 2nd at Sam's Town Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. And it is going to be like a flip around the mirror image of Professor Gary Lee's with the Hawaiian flavor. It'll have, except it won't have Cotawars or Bubble Kumite or the Kevin Funakoshi Challenge, but it will have a lot of other stuff and a lot of seminars. It will have a display from the Sport Karate Museum and all that kind of stuff. So be sure, check that out. Get your tickets. Book your tables now, because that is something that you need to do. Now, on a different note here, someone that was dear and near to the History Museum, passed away today, Elizabeth Sweeney. So we really ask you people to pray for them, and, you know, if you can, you know, send whatever you can to them. Billy Sweeney is her husband. He's left with the kids, and these are great, great people. Billy Sweeney does so much for the Sport Museum and is always working and doing things and, you know, has created this mural for the museum of the Legends Wall. And then Elizabeth Sweeney worked so hard at the roasts and different things, working in the NBL and following Billy around and being a mother. And just, I don't know if you got to meet her or not, but she is one of the best. She was one of the best, nicest, sweetest people you could ever meet. I'm glad that I got to spend time with her and Billy in Houston, and I'm glad that she was my friend. But we just want to take 30 seconds here, just a moment of silence in remembrance of her. And, you know, Billy, if you guys are listening to the show, God bless you and your kids. I'm here for you. The professor's here for you. Anything you need, just give us a call, and we'll help you out, brother. But let's just take 30 seconds of silence for Elizabeth Sweeney. All right, amen. Thank you very much, and we pray for her. Heaven definitely has an angel there in Miss Elizabeth Sweeney, because she was one of a kind, and she will be deeply missed by many. At this time, we would like to bring on a man that is not only a martial artist. He is a fireman, retired fireman, and it took a lot of doing to get him on the show because he is not one to brag on himself. But if you've ever met him, you would never meet a nicer man, and he is very knowledgeable when it comes to the arts of self-defense and things of that nature. And I met him at the Sport Museum Living Legends Roast a few years back. He actually sat in on my ninth Dan black belt test and was one of the people judging that. And, you know, he's just a super, super nice guy, and we just wanted to bring him on the show because he's an amazing individual, and we want to make sure that he is recognized. And not only was he a fireman, he was a captain. So at this time, we would like to bring on my friend, Mr. Jim Paskey. Mr. Paskey, are you there, sir?
I'm here.
All righty. Well, I will call you Jim because you said you wanted me to call you Jim.
I think we've known each other long enough. We can get a little more personal than Mr. Paskey. That's my dad.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just, you know, you're so awesome. I mean, your name is on my certificate and things of that nature. So, you know, I still respectfully will say Jim. But you are somebody to me that is near and dear to my heart, somebody that I always look forward to seeing when I go to the Sport Museum Legends Roast. And I really look forward to seeing you there when we go there. And we always have a good time just sitting and talking with you. Unfortunately, most of the time I've got to get to bed because, you know, I'm still young and I have to be tucked in early. Actually, that's not true. I have to get to bed because Professor Gary Lee is going to work my butt off the next day, so I got to hurry up and get some sleep because I got to compete and all this kind of craziness. But it's always
either
good
that,
to talk to you.
Either that or you're a little wimpy. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know that y'all refer to me as milk and cookies, but that's
milk toast. It was milk toast.
Yeah, milk toast. Yeah, that's what it was. Milk toast.
Right.
Yeah.
Milk toast.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, Mr. Paskey, we'll start this out. I'll just throw some questions at you, and you can answer them and give as much or as little information as you want to give. But remember, you're not bragging on yourself. You're giving information that people need because youngsters and other people in the martial arts, they need to know who you are. They need to know about you because, you know, you've got an amazing, amazing lineage. And, you know, your friends are amazing martial artists on top of that. But, you know, you have an amazing lineage on top of it. But so my first question will be, when did you start training in the martial arts?
When? My anniversary.
Yes, sir.
This month, 49 years ago. So it's July, 49 years ago, and I've been pretty steady at it. I've been fortunate.
Man, so that's 49 years.
Yes, this month.
Yeah, man.
And I don't know what day. I'd have to look that up, but I was blessed, and I just stumbled into one of the best karate schools in the world. I had always loved the kung fu movies, the James Bond movies where he'd do the chops, anything that had anything to do with karate. I even bought and I still have it when I was in junior high school, an Aikido book. And I would twist fingers and do things if anybody grabbed me, which no formal training or anything, but I just loved it. And when I worked for a drive-in theater, and when I saw the movie Billy Jack, it's like that set in stone that I had to do that. And when I got out of high school, I went into motorcycle racing and decided I was going to kill myself if I kept this up. So I sold my motorcycle, and I knew where two karate schools were. One was J. Pat Burleson, which is my lineage. He came from Jun Ri, was our founding father of our martial arts. And Alan Steen and J. Pat Burleson were his first two black belts in the United States. And then my instructors, Chuck Lovin is who I walked into the karate school because it was closest to my house. And I was watching, I went in and Bill Shaw was talking to a lady. He told me she'd be right with me. And I sat down and I was watching a karate great, Ken McDowell, getting ready for his black belt test. And he is going through katas, which I didn't know a kata from shmata, but it looked great. Big, strong, powerful kicks. It's like I'd never seen anything like it. And he is going through these katas. And I know what some of the katas are because I can still remember. And finally, Bill called me in the office and he says, you know, how can I help you? And I said, can you make me look like that guy right there? And he said, well, if you work as hard as him, you will be as good as him. And I've been at it ever since.
Well, you're definitely good at it. So I know you put your time and your work in. That is for sure. I know you've got the lineage with Alan Steen, J. Pat Burleson, June Reed, Chuck Lovin. I mean, that right there is a pedigree. So I guess, you know,
I'm not through there because Chuck Lovin left me in 1973. I started in 70. And Chuck Lovin left. I'd gotten injured. I was plagued with injuries, and I dislocated my knee, and I was out for a few months. When I came back, the karate school was boarded up. No signs. I called a couple of people that I knew. They weren't there, and I was just out of a school. And I ended up going to Billy Brammer, the great, late, great Billy Brammer, Grandmaster, one of the totally different personality than Chuck Lovin. I mean, great people, and I got my black belt from him. But I've got to put Billy Brammer in there because he's like, he died a couple of years ago, and he was just a fantastic friend and mentor.
Right. So your style was like you was on the cusp of American karate, correct? Because you had a lot of Taekwondo and then American karate system.
Well, it started Taekwondo, and this is the way I was told that Billy Brammer was gee whiz, I'm having a brain problem here. Shotokan. He was also had a black belt in Shotokan. And he came into, because there wasn't a school around, he went to J. Pat Burleson and started there and working up for his black belt in Taekwondo. And they mainly use feet, which, you know, that's mostly what the Taekwondo uses. And
right.
He came in, he's fighting, and he was good at his hands, and he was pounding those boys. And they said, never again, and they started, everybody started learning to fight with their hands, and it spread on out to the tournaments and everything else to where now everybody uses the hands too, not just feet.
Right.
But that,
right.
That was attributed to Billy Brammer. And that guy, he's a bricklayer. He had big hands for, he wasn't a big guy, he was a little bigger than me, but he had the most exact technique to this day of anybody I've ever seen. He could get more out of a punch, hilt movement than anybody I've ever seen. And it's like, oh, I learned so. It's like, if you ever, anybody, if they're listening that worked with Billy Brammer or learned from Billy Brammer, you can ask them. Our first kata was Chunji. If you ever did it right, and they'll say, heck no, because you couldn't get a kata right. You didn't get enough hip. You didn't get enough snap. It's just always like that. But he made
right.
great technicians and great fighters.
Right. Right. Well, so did you like to compete? Did you compete? Did you have a, I know you had to do some competing to promote and things.
To promote. You couldn't promote unless you actually won a tournament, and it could be fourth place, third place, whatever, but you had to compete and win. And I went up every 2 months up until my third brown because I got injured, and then it was like a delay getting my second brown, and then delay, you know, because of, you know, I've had my knee dislocated 5 times. Nose broke, teeth
right.
broke, ribs broke, hand broke, toes, you know, toes jammed. Always,
right.
always, you know, we didn't have hand and feet gear, and it was all out war.
Right.
I didn't wear a mouth until I broke two teeth, got two teeth knocked out by Ken Kitchens. I got him back for that, but he broke my nose another time, and I never did get even with him for that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize it in the, I mean, I say olden days, but when I was training, you know, was in the and really fighting hard in the latter part of the 70s, you know, we would rip off some piece of a cardboard box, fold it in, and we'd put it in our mouth and clamp down on it, and that was to keep your teeth from smacking together. That was, I guess that was our mouthpiece that we used. But, so you had an amazing sidekick from what I hear. Tell.
Well, I'm not a big guy. You know, I was 135 pounds soaking wet. And unless you were fighting in one of the bigger tournaments, there was no weight divisions. So, you know, I'd throw a sidekick and they'd run over it. And I found out if I rolled it around into more of a back kick, which I could still look at it, so I called it a sidekick, there was nobody run over that. And it's like somebody had run in because you'd have a big guy think, oh, this is easy meat, and he'd run in, and you'd jam that sidekick up his gut, and you could hit his heart with it, and they'd be running from you from then on. But –
right. Well, you know, in Taekwondo, the sidekick, it does roll over like that. It's technically a back kick, like you say, yeah.
Well, it rolls over, but it's more to the side. You know, you were a Joe Louis student. Joe Louis had the best technical side. I've watched many a film on him. Best technical sidekick of anybody I ever remember seeing. He could fold that thing and jab that thing out there, and it was what I call the perfect sidekick. Well, mine had the hip because I'd throw that butt and it didn't look like it was coming, and then here this foot comes with it, and it was my butt was going toward him and my heel was going toward him at the same time, and it was a good kick. Now, do you know Phil Wyman? He's
I'm not.
You need to get. you need to get him on the show because he was a world champion, just a great, great fighter back in the day. And he was at our school the other day. We had a black belt test, and he and I were talking and laughing about because he did exactly the same sidekick. He said, as a matter of fact, he said he doesn't even teach a sidekick because he just teaches a back kick that you're looking at, not a turn back kick, but you just roll that hip and slam it out.
Right. Right.
And I thought that was amusing, but, you know, I know several really, really good fighters of back in the day that did the same thing, and I didn't know it till later. I just came up with this on my own.
Right, right. Well, yeah, so it was called the Paskey Sidekick, from what I understand. That's what
Billy Smith and Billy Brammer would shake his head, said, you know, don't call that a sidekick. You know, so he said, yes, sir, but that's my sidekick.
So I'll ask you this before. So what was your favorite technique to hit people with?
I always felt like I was the king of groin shots. That was my meat and potatoes. I could do a slide-up spin kick, just raise my knee. It doesn't look like it's going to hit, but the momentum of raising my knee will slide me up a foot or two to where I could hit the groin, and it just shocked the dickens out of people because they never thought it would reach.
Yeah, but I'm sure it did shock him.
It didn't look like it'd reach. And then I had I called it an inverted spin kick to where I'd come in. It looked like I was totally missing them, and I'd roll my hip, and it'd come in and hit them, and you could hear the cup pop. And that was another one of my favorite techniques. And a lot of hand techniques, you'd go to the face, and just when they went up the block, I'd come around with a ridge hand to the groin or just a full grab, you know.
A lot of our listeners know because they grew up, you know, back then when it was fighting, but a lot of people don't realize that groin techniques was a legal target area back then too in tournament competition. And in the NBL, every odd year, it's still a legal striking area. So this year on the West Coast in the NBL, that would be a legal striking area. So,
well, I didn't understand not having it. You know, the person has the option to block it, so just like your nose.
Right.
Sometimes they'll hit the nose hard. Well, you've got an option to block it. If you don't, you know, they'll disqualify you, but you only go
right
for the nose real hard when you're going to get this, when you're going to lose anyway, because you feel like you're getting ripped off.
Nah, you wouldn't get ripped off in sport karate. That's a whole nother show. I've actually been stockpiling a lot of footage that I've got to go over with Professor Gary Lee of people literally doing these hand rolls with a sword, and they're grabbing the blade of their sword and then rolling it around and then grabbing back to the handle. And judges are scoring them for first place. And they're, like, catching their sword on the back of the wrist and throwing it up and landing on the, you know, with the both parts on. I'm like, yeah, this is not good. But that's a whole nother show.
Well, I'm a traditional guy. And it's like, and I think you get the really old people, which I guess I'm one of the really old guys, but you get the old people, and we're traditionalists. And it's like I like to be using real sticks, real swords, real, you know, that's just me. I like the power.
Right.
I like, you know, which I have a hard time judging the kung fu, which it's a beautiful thing, but man, I'm a taekwondo hip powers, gi snapping kind of guy.
You're right. Yeah. Well, and that's why there's so many different styles of martial arts, because martial arts, I mean, a lot of times people, it's kind of like picking a puppy. A lot of times people look for a puppy that they want, but the best one is the one that picks you. And the best styles of martial arts is the ones that pick you. And if you're picked by Taekwondo, then, you know, that's good. And that's what suits you and that fits you. And that's what your body does best. You know, and that's a great thing. You know, a lot of times Taekwondo gets a bad rap because of Olympic-style Taekwondo. But if you put kicks coming at somebody's head at 90 miles an hour, then it changes the outcome of the way Taekwondo is looked at because of the kicking prowess. So,
well,
you know,
I can't knock any martial arts that's effective and you can defend yourself with. As long as they're teaching
right. How
to defend yourself, if a school's not teaching how to defend somebody how to defend themselves, then they're wasting their money going to that school.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, that's true. Now, I know this is all already, but we're just going to ask it for the listeners. So, you know, you've been studying martial arts, been involved with martial arts for 49 years. Are you still teaching martial arts now?
I taught two classes tonight and left early to come here.
Man, that's amazing stuff right there. 49 years experience and still teaching people.
Well, I teach at Billy's Grandmaster. Let me get this Grandmaster Billy Smith School, which it's a great school in Burleson. We've got put out some really good students. I can't say enough about, you know, it's a good school. And I'll also go to Bridgeport every time he can drag me over there. Stephen Starnes, if you've met him, great guy. And he's got good school. I teach over there as often as I can make myself. But as long as somebody still wants me, I'll probably be teaching.
Oh, well, I'm sure there's going to be a want for you forever. Now, listen, I know that me and you talked and you had shared a story with me, one of the highlights of your martial arts career, because you and I both are big into teaching self-defense, and you had an incident where you trained some of your students for self-defense. Let's tell the people about that, because that's a good story.
Well, it's been, 10, 12, I don't know how many years ago. And up to this day, 49 years later, you know, I've taught who knows how many black belts. I don't keep up with it. I think Billy Smith does and Billy Brammer did that I was involved in it. But I had a girl that she'd made blue belt, a very decent student, very good for a blue belt. And she'd gone off to college out of town, and she's gone for a while, and she came back during one of the breaks, and she called me over to the side, and she said, "Mr. Paskey, I just wanted to tell you something. A friend of hers had gone to the mall, and two guys jumped out of a van, something like you'd see in a movie, and just grabbed them and started dragging the girl, and she just automatically, she said she went and started doing what she had learned, and she had the guy punched a few times and on the ground and crying, and jumped up and started at the other guy, and they ran, jumped in the van and took off. And she saved those two girls from being abducted. And it's like, that has made my 49 years. One incident has made my 49 years of teaching martial arts and self-defense worth my time, because it actually was used to save two people.
Right.
So
right.
that's my claim to fame for 49 years of effort.
Hey, well, you know what? That is great, because, you know, just like we were talking about before, you know, it may have been or seemed as though two girls were saved that night, but the pain and anguish that both families would have suffered had anything happened to those girls, you actually changed the course of several lives. Not only that, But the people that were involved trying to kidnap these girls, had they kidnapped these girls or you know, murdered them or anything of that nature and then been caught, I mean, it would have changed their life too. So you actually changed, I mean, a number of people's lives. I mean, it could total almost 100. I mean, you're thinking about the lives and the different things that could have went on. And that, so, you know, it may seem like a small thing in one way, but the magnitude of just saving one life, because it reaches more than one. And a lot of times we think of that and you know, we think of that that, you know, even when I train the military, I think, okay, well, I hope, you know, the stuff that I'm teaching, you know, saves a life. But, you know, not only does it save a life, but it actually touches the lives of, you know, a lot of people. So that night you changed the course of a lot of people's lives. And because of you, those two girls have probably went on to have families and kids of their own. And, you know, so because of you, there's generations continuing to go forward. So that's a big deal and a great job.
Well, I can't take total credit for this, because she was also Billy Smith student, Grandmaster Steve Park student, and you know, it's a family effort. We call this the karate family. It's just not your karate school. We're a karate family,
right.
and you know what I mean. You grow to love these people like they're your own brothers and sisters,
right.
And kids, and it's like it's a strange thing to people who don't realize.
Right. Yeah, and you know, that's the thing is, you know, and Professor and I often, you know, talk about it on the show and even to each other, but you know, people don't realize, and students a lot of times don't realize how much their instructors care for them. And no matter, you know, a lot of times some students think that they're not progressing or that they're at a standstill, but they don't realize, because they're students, that slow progress is still progress. And that, you know, the teachers' main view is, you know, once you've been doing this a long time, you can tell more about what somebody is ready for than they know they're ready for. You know, some people think they're ready for something and they're not. And then some people don't think they're ready for something and they are. And, you know, as an instructor, we kind of pick that up a lot sooner. And so, you know, the loyalty and the family bond that it builds is really strong. And that's why a lot of students don't realize, you know, how saddened it makes instructors when their students leave, you know, for ego or for, you know, whatever reasons, you know, self-gain or just monetary reasons or whatever. You know, because like you say, it is a family. Because like, just like coming to Houston every year, you know, I look so forward to seeing you and you know, Mr. Smith and Mr. Parks and, you know, just people that I don't get to see every day. But I look so forward to seeing you guys because, you know, you're just like family. I mean, I may not see you but once or twice a year, but when I do see you, that connection is there. It's not like we have to get reacquainted. It's just like,
yeah,
I talked to you yesterday.
It's amazing,
it's
like
you've
been together all along. It's really a great thing. And that's one thing. I'm gonna pat Gary Lee and this gathering, pat it on the back. I have met, for anybody out there listening, if you haven't came to one of these, there are some karate greats, me included. I'm kidding on that, but there are some karate
you are really great, sir,
that come there. You know, there's a lit, you know, I can rattle off, you know, I've met Mikey Roe Moore. I love her. She was there, and I'd heard her on this radio thing that y'all got going. And I'd always known who she was, and I walked by and somebody said something, and I came up to Mikey and I said, "Excuse me, you're Mikey Rowe." She says, "Yes, Mikey Rowe Moore," because she's married now. And I says, "Well, you've been one of my heroes all my life. Can I hug you?" And I hugged her, and we have been just peas and carrots ever since. You know, we just became really good friends. But I met so many great, you know, Colonel Phil Torres, John Natavida, Daryl Bigfoot Stewart. You know, there's so many fantastic people. Grandmaster Tony Lopez. They're just that you meet and become friends with. And you become friends because y'all got a mutual thing there. You've been through, especially us old guys, you've been through the bare nut, getting the absolute crap beat out of you many a times. And to me, I think back and I think, man, people had to be absolutely out of their mind to be in karate back then because there were no gloves, and you'd get in there, beat the heck out of each other, and then you're the best friends you ever was afterwards. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure.
But anybody who hasn't came, they need to get tickets to this. Get a hotel. Come see it. Be there. Be part of the group, and you'll be hooked like I've been hooked for 5-6 years.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short break. While I do a rant with Kicking It with the Wolverine, and it's not really a rant tonight, but it's just information about what we'll be doing and things of that nature. But I'll do that. Then when I come back, we're going to play the Legends name game, and I'm going to throw some names at you. And then after that, before we wrap this show up, I want you to tell us about what it's like to be a fireman and how martial arts has helped you with that and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to take just a short break, and I'll do that.
Okie doke.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the one and only Mr. Jim Paskey, martial artist, and, you know, 49 years, that's a long time. That's a great passion to have, still teaching classes, you know, even teaching classes tonight before the radio show. And I did, when I told him it was going to be on Tuesday, the first thing out of his mouth was, Tuesday. I teach on Tuesday. I'll have to leave early. But you could tell that his first concern was to his students, because that's what a true master does, and a great individual. But I just wanted to talk to everybody for a minute and just let you know that, you know, I'm going to try to start bringing on, next week we're going to have Mr. Dennis Brown from the U.S. Capital Classic and the China Open. His tournament is coming up in about 4 or 5 weeks in Washington, D.C., and I mean it is absolutely an amazing, amazing tournament. And I don't know how many of you know Mr. Brown, but he is an amazing, amazing individual, an amazing man. I'm glad to be able to call him my friend and get to talk to him as much as I do. Well, we share one thing in common. At Elite Combat, we have a thing called No Room for Racism, and we have been doing this. We're not the ones that started it, but we were asked to spearhead it, and I was kind of asked to be the forefront of it and the face of it. So we're doing that, and so Mr. Brown is going to be talking about that, the No Room for Racism, and the his upcoming event that is coming up. And so we want to get you people, you know, on the show, calling in and listening to that. Also, I'm going to start bringing in some of the we're going to go back and forth and bring in some of the younger competitors. Maybe not kids, but, you know, we may talk to one or two and see what they're up to. But some of the younger competitors in their 18s, 20s, 30s, even 40s, and just talk to some of those players and, you know, get their perspective, because there's a lot of great people out there. I mean, this past weekend at the U.S. Open, he competed down into the 30-plus, you know, and those guys are still, they're cutting flips and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's just a lot of stuff is amazing. Martial arts is different because it's changed so much. In the early days, it was all hardcore and about self-defense. and practical fighting, kickboxing type skills, things of that nature. Nowadays, there's, you know, you still have that side of it, a flair of the old, but now you've got the new with the tricking competitions, the hyper games, things of that nature, where people are just, you know, they're cutting flips, they're doing crazy tricks with their weapons and things of that nature. Now, is it practical? Is it not practical? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But does it look good, and is it awesome to put on a show? And not just that, it's not just that. So you take that away from them, because martial arts is about not only being able to defend oneself, but if one is weak, then you really can't defend yourself. So these kids that are doing some of the newer stuff, the athleticism that these people bring to competition is crazy, because it takes a lot of endurance, as you know, just to do a regular kata, let alone to be flipping and screaming and kiving and cutting flips and then doing your weapons. Not to mention that, the hand-eye coordination and things of that nature that it's building. So it's a lot of good, positive stuff, even in the new. And my job is, I'm right on that cusp where I'm trying to keep the old going and embrace the new, and I do some of both. So I want to try to bring in and get it to where the new guys see what the older school did, and the new school, you know, sees what the older school did, and the old school sees what the new school is doing. They embrace each other and make martial arts even take another big step and just continue to increase what we do, and to continue to build on it and make it better and better and better. Because that's what martial arts is all about, is continuing to make things better and finding different ways of doing things and making things stronger and better. So that's going to be some of the things that we're going to be doing. So we hope y'all will enjoy that. All right, so now what we're going to do, we're going to get back to Jim. Jim, are you there?
I'm still here.
All righty. Well, okay, we're going to play the Legends Name Game. And in the Legends Name Game, I'm just going to throw out some names of some legends, and then you got 2 minutes to tell me about them. If you got something good to say about them, you know, I mean, I know you have good stuff to say about them, but you know, you may have more to say about one and the other. But we're going to do that, and then we're going to talk about the fireman stuff.
If you didn't check on me to see, make sure I knew who you're asking me about. I hope it's people
well,
I know.
Well, you know, I'm sure you know these guys. I'm sure you know these guys, because the first one is Mr. Billy Smith.
Billy Smith and I have been friends for over 40 years. We are close. It's amazing. I was with Chuck Lovin, and he was a Billy Brammer student at that time. And we went – I don't know how we never met each other back when I was fighting, you know, in the lower ranks up to black belt. But it's
did you
like
say biting or fighting?
Fighting. I never had to him. There was no weight division. You've seen Billy Smith. He makes 3 of me. It's like me,
Billy.
Yeah.
He makes three of most people. He's a large man.
Yeah. Well, back then, it's like he was real skinny, you wouldn't believe it, but it's like he had these long legs and long arms. Now, I've sparred him in class, but never at a tournament. And there's nothing to hit, and you've got to get past these granddaddy long legs and arms to get to him. So he gets all this steak while you get a little bit of hamburger meat when you finally get in there. Just a tough fighter, tough. He had a family. Had he been able to do the world circuit, he would have been a world champion. Billy Smith was one of the best fighters I've ever seen. And it's not being prejudiced. This is just fact.
Right. One, well, I believe you.
He does the Bubble Kumite for the upcoming event, and he is hilarious. He's like that all the time. Great guy. Love this man.
Then my next one is Mr. Steve Park.
That's the other amigo. We were on the way down last year or year before last, on the way down to the gathering, and Billy was sitting in the back, and I'm up front because Steve likes to monotone. He will talk and lecture, and Billy says, "Yeah, we're like the three amigos," and both those, you know, they're like 6'5", 240 pounds. They're just giant men, and I'm 5'9", 165 pounds, and I said, "It's more like two amigos and one amiglet." And Steve says, "Yeah, two amigos and one miglet." I said, "No, amiglet, you know, don't go there." So I've been the miglet ever since. But Steve is just a great guy. He's loyal to the T. If I, you know, I've known him for years. I've known him for a lot of years too. And if he's one of the people that I know that if I needed something, I could call Steve, says, "Steve, I need you." And no matter where he is or what, he would be there for me. He's that kind of a friend. He's just, you know, we're close as brothers. You pick two guys that I'm just super close to.
Yeah, and you can tell that, and you guys have a good time. Now, this third guy, I mean, you spoke about him a little bit, but let's talk about him a little bit more, Professor Gary Lee.
Now, Gary Lee, I met, it's been about 6 years ago. Me and Billy went down with some others to Tony, Grandmaster Tony Lopez, great fighter, you know him, was doing a seminar. So we went down to Houston for the seminar, and we were in the same area where Gary Lee has a school, and he had a little museum there before he moved it. And Gary Lee came by and started talking to me and Billy, and me and Gary Lee hit it off. And about a year or so later, he asked me to be a history general, and we've just been really close ever since. Now, anybody who knows Gary Lee, and I was telling them this today, he's actually becomes your friend. Now, to me, Gary Lee's a famous way up there person because everybody knows Gary Lee. And it's like he treated me like I was the most special person ever. And I thought I was special. I says, "You know, you made me feel special, but I think that's just your knack. Everybody feels special when they're with Gary Lee." And that's just everybody.
You know, it's because he knows so much and retains so much knowledge that, you know, it makes you feel that way because, you know what, he's the type guy that, you know, he says he's an Ookie, and, you know, he means that because he is so good at bringing out the best in people, for one, and he does that because he is such a good martial artist himself, that he's so confident in the martial artist that he is, he don't mind bringing out the best in others and bragging on people and shining their light also. And that's rare in the martial arts, because most people in the martial arts, the only light that they want to shine is their own, you know. And
there
I
are.
Think that, you know, Professor is so confident that he shines everybody's light, you know.
Well,
he's like a prism. He's like a prism of martial arts. That's exactly what he's like.
He's got an ability to make everybody feel like they're special.
Yeah.
I'm serious. And it's like I love the guy. We've had just a great, great relationship. And I appreciate Gary Lee. If he's listening, I appreciate you, Gary Lee, the utmost.
Oh, well, he always listens, because he's never far from the Wolverine. I can assure you that.
Well, you talk
right, Mr.
about
Chuck Lovin. Yeah, go ahead.
Chuck Lovin. What can I say? Chuck Lovin was really an animal. I love Chuck Lovin, but he was my first. School I went to, my first exchange, you know how it is. He was like bigger than life, just like Joe Lewis was to you, bigger than life. Chuck Lovin was like that to me. He was bigger than life, nice guy. He had that kind of a belly on me, smoked cigarettes. He is the toughest guy you ever saw in your life. You'd line up in Gaumont position, and he'd walk by there, and if you had the least little relaxation, he'd hit you in the gut. So it's like he'd walk by you, and you'd like, because you didn't know what was coming. But he was
right.
A great instructor. He put out some good students. Pat Worley was one of them. You know him. And he was a United States champion. He did some great students. Larry Carnahan, Jim Paskey, he just had some.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. Well, didn't he turn out Jim Paskey was one of his?
Yeah, Jim Paskey, Jack Williams, Doug Emerson, Charlotte Hoffman. She was like a champion. He had so many really great students that just, and I'm so blessed to have been in that family, just amazing guy. And, he died several years ago, and it hurts my heart to this day. He and Billy Brammer are the top of my list on human beings in this world. They such an influence in my life.
I'm sure. What about Maxie Cordova?
Now, Maxie, which I send him a message. I hope he's listening. Now, back in the day when I started, I'm a white belt. I'm going to tournaments trying to win white belt and orange belt and all. And you go and you talk to these, you see these people, you watch them fight, and you want to meet them. So you go up and you, hello, sir, I'm Jim Paskey. And it's like I've had them black belts turn around and just look at you like you're scum and turn around and walk off. There were such egos there that I've never understood. And Maxie was a contender. He was a small guy. He was smaller than me. And he was a contender. He was on Black Belt magazine, and hello, Mr. Cardoza, and he just started talking to me, and it's like, I was his groupie from then on, because he talked to me like I was a human. And unless a black belt was in your school, you couldn't get the time of day from these people. And I had learned a lesson from Maxie that I love. He's one of my favorite people in the world, that I didn't want anybody, any student, to ever feel like I did when I was a kid starting martial arts, and to feel like, these people treated you like you were nothing. And I don't care, orange belt, white belt, whatever, I treat them as they're as good as I am, because they're a black belt in the making.
Right. And the sad thing about it is that goes on still at martial arts competitions today. I'll see, kids and even black belt maybe go up to somebody that's considered an upper level competitor, and they just walk off and don't talk. Heck, some of them even do me that way, and I've probably won more than they have. But, in their own mind, they're way ahead, because I have spoke to some that just like, and just walk off like, I ain't got time for you, man. You're the Wolverine.
They don't realize.
What they don't realize is they keep screwing around, they'll get the claws. That's what they don't realize. But, it is true. And I like, because even at the U.S. Open, several occasions while I was competing, when I got done, I had some kids come up and even some adults and some people come up. And, they during my routines, I could hear them. And as I was moving, I could see them really cheering. I didn't know these people from Adam. But when I got done, they don't realize it. They may have thought they felt special by coming out and saying something to me and me talking back to them, but they really made me feel special by coming out and giving me their comments and telling me, what they thought of what I was doing and, how it impacted them and asking me questions about stuff. And I even got to help one little kid with some sword techniques, and then later on I was walking through and I seen him and his parents. And I walked up to him and I said, "Hey," I said, "how did your routine go?" And his parents were just beaming. It was like, "Oh, he won!" And he was so excited. He was hoping he would see you again, because he wanted to tell you. That makes a big difference in people's lives. Because just like you say, that can be the turning point in someone's life in the martial arts world when they're treated that way. If you don't talk to them, respect them. So what Mr. Cordova done for you helped you become the great martial artist that you are and the person to pass on that exact same thing, that paying it forward. And that's an amazing thing. And that is, I want to tell people that is an amazing thing about you, because you have always made me feel special. I know that. And
well,
from the first time I met you. Well, you know what? You're just an awesome individual. But before we run out of time, I want to hear about the fireman, Jim Paskey, and what that was like and what it meant to you to be a fireman. And then we can wrap it up.
Yeah. I started in 1972 on the fire department, and it's like I hit my niche. I worked my way up to captain, and working my way up to captain for 7 years, I was an arson and bomb investigator. And just part of the fire department, a great job. I was firefighter of the year twice for a couple of things I did. It was just a great career. And I don't know if it's just my personality or just that a lot of the things I've learned in martial arts, because I was in martial arts a couple of years before I got on the fire department, nearly 3 years. And, you know, it was a great job, a great career. If I had it to do over again, I'd start sooner if I could get on the fire department, because Fort Worth Fire Department was just a great place to work for. You're helping people all the time, and I don't know, maybe that sounds weird that you like doing stuff like that. It's an adrenaline rush, people running away from fires, and you're going into it. It was just a great career. I was blessed beyond all means to have the life I've lived.
Right. Well, you are an amazing individual, and you know, being a fireman is definitely a great thing, and you know, is you know, being a fireman is one of the things that most people love, you know, or they love firemen, you know, because they are, you know, when you think of a fireman, you think about somebody that's trying to help you. And that's pretty much what you think about when you think of a Jim Paskey, because it's pretty much the same way.
Well, I look at that same way for a police officer, same way for someone in the military, and I appreciate your military service, and you're still teaching the military. It's just, I appreciate that. I didn't go in the military. Vietnam was going strong, and it's going to have to draft me. I wasn't going to volunteer. It was by the time I was eligible, I got a good lottery number. The first only time I've ever been really lucky, except for winning Yeti coolers at Stephen Starnes' karate tournament once a year. But
hey, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, 3 years in a row I've won a Yeti cooler at the Monica Lopez. It's the money goes to cancer, to help a cancer. They find a cancer patient and help them.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a good
call.
It's
a great tournament, and I support that every year. And I dump a bunch of money into it just to support it, not win a Yeti every year. So I guess I get something back. other than just enjoying the tournament. I love going
right.
and watching and judging, and it's just you know, this is a great life.
Right.
Being in the karate
yeah.
world is just a great experience. You you know, you have a good effect on a lot of people. I get more. And people don't realize, I think I get more out of teaching than they get out of me teaching.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way. You're exactly right. It is something that people don't realize how rewarding it is sometimes, you know.
I'm just curious, is Maxie, can if if they're listening, can they?
They can hear you, but they can't answer.
I was just curious because before I'd call before, and it's like I just talked, and y'all could hear me. You know, everybody was getting back on their, so I didn't know if it's still like that.
No, most of the time they can't hear you, but I'm sure that he got to call and listen in. I'm hoping a lot of people did because it was a great show, in my opinion. It was great to hear from you. It was great to hear all about your stuff. I know a lot of people got a lot of information, and, you know, I just want to thank you for your years in the martial arts and for training people and your passion about it. I want to thank you for being my friend, and I want to thank you for being a firefighter and a first responder for so many years. And you know, that's a lot of lives and a lot of things that you've done that you know, people don't really even know about that makes you a hero, even though people don't know, you know.
Well, that's what you are to
a lot of people.
Well, I'm honored that Gary Lee and you would even consider me to talk to me on this radio show, because there's so many karate greats out there that haven't been on this show that should be on this show, because karate wise they've done so much more than I have.
We're doing our best, and we're going to try to get as many of them on here as we can, and you know, work our way around to it. And you know, any names that you have, you can always just, you know, shoot me a message there on Facebook and you know, give me their number and stuff, and we'll look into it, talking to them, because I want to try to bring in, you know, as many people as we can, even people that people may not know at all. That's the main thing, and get them recognized in that manner.
You got me on here, and I'm one that nobody knows except in my small karate world. And it's grown a lot.
Right. Well, you turn out a lot of good students, and you do a lot of good. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that we got you on here and talked to you for sure.
Well, there's nothing like watching a student. He walks in the door is nothing. And the finished product when they make their black belt, the thing that hurts me the most, and it probably does you too, because I'm sure you have this same thing happen to you over and over. You nurse these people from beginning to black belt, and then they just disappear. When you get your black belt, you know, that's just a black belt. You have studied just to wrap this belt around you. But after you get that, you've got to become a black belt. You've got this
exactly.
belt. But that is just one step in becoming a black belt. And it's like,
exactly,
there was no way when I made my black belt, as hard fought as that thing was, that I was ever going to not do it. I had somebody ask me once, I'd had a long spell of health issues and I was out. And this guy said to me, didn't you used to be a black belt? And I was being sickly. And I said, no, I didn't used to be a black belt. I am a black belt. I will always be a black belt. And I will always work at being a black belt. This is just a setback.
Right. Yeah, you got injuries. I like just right now I've got a torn tendon in my foot. But I didn't want to bring that up because I knew you would pour me a glass of milk and fix me some toast and tell me to suck it up. And make fun of me, so I didn't want to bring it up.
I'm sorry, that's my personal. I'm a fireman. Firemen will laugh and make fun of each other in the most horrible conditions.
That's the way it is in the military too. I mean, you know.
Well, I figured I was going to say that, but I didn't know if you'd ever been in the military. It can be hitting the fan, and firemen will be saying stupid stuff, and it's how you cope with bad stuff.
Yeah, it's that's the exact same way it is in the military too. I mean, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff going on, and you know, people where with cracking jokes and things of that nature. But it is a coping mechanism.
Yeah,
that's
you can take
sure.
You're gonna die and you'll be joking about it. And it's like I don't know, it's some pompous male hormone thing or something. I don't know. But it's
yeah, I don't
like
know what it is. It could just crazy people doing crazy things. I think it's people that do jobs that other people, you know, wouldn't dream about doing. Well, Mr. Paskey, that wraps up our show. And I tell you what, sir, it has been a pleasure talking to you. And I cannot wait to see you in Houston. Hopefully I'll
Thank
have
you.
Some downtime and I can sit with you and talk with you and all that good stuff while I'm there that weekend. I look forward to it. Do what?
I never get to visit with you enough. It's just so many people and so little time that you want to visit with.
Yeah, that's true. Professor's got me competing and stuff, but one day maybe I can just take a break and, you know, just sit around and talk to everybody. So I'm going to try to see if I can't work my schedule out more this time so I can do some of that. But definitely going to get to see you and talk to you, and that's going to be great because I always look forward to that. And can't wait for that. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, please keep Professor Gary Lee in your prayers. And, you know, keep looking for the GoFundMe. Also, remember, next week we're going to have on Mr. Dennis Brown, a U.S. Capital Classic promoter, U.S. China Open promoter, and he will be giving all the stuff of what's going on up there. And, Jim, anytime you want to call me, just come right on. And if you ever come back out to Destin, you know, I want you to stop into my class and, you know, work with them on some of your self-defense techniques for sure.
I would love to. And thank you. And I'm so honored that y'all picked me to do this above it.
Well, it's our honor, sir. It's our honor.
Have a good one. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
You too, buddy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Jim Paskey, martial artist and fireman, retired captain. And we just like to say we thank you for letting us come into your home each and every Tuesday night. And we want to let each and every one of you know that we love you and we thank you very much for doing that and keeping the show going. And until next time, keep your kicks up, stay strong. Puss.